this is a conversation that I had with Christian Muka, the creator of the Possible Conference that's in Miami Beach from April 27th to 29th. The Rebooting is happy to be a media partner of Possible for the event. Thank you to the team there. We'll be around the Fontainebleau doing a video series, probably by a pool. So if you see me holding a TRB branded microphone, say hello, or at least don't mock me while we're filming. I hope to see some of you in the lobby area and around the pools. Drop me a line if you'll be in town. We're going to get some people together for an informal meetup. My email is brian@therebooting.com. Now, here's my conversation with Christian about building events. All right, welcome to The Rebooting Show. I am Brian Morrissey. I am very pleased to be joined by Christian Muka. Christian is the founder of Possible. If you do not know Possible, it is in its fourth year. It's the fourth edition this year. It has become one of the sort of tentpole events in the marketing media landscape. I mean, for me, I would put them as like CES kicks off the year. Everyone has their meetings in Vegas. They complain about going to Vegas, and then they go to Las Vegas, and they sequester in these suites in the Cosmopolitan, and it has its own sort of rhythms. They all do. Maybe they see some robots like on the show floor, but it's really about the meetings to kick off the year. And then I think Possible has established itself in April as a go-to event. Like, I was a little skeptical. We'll get into that. So I want to be honest. And then Cannes is a major event. All of these things are very different. In the fall, maybe Advertising Week. I think Advertising Week, I'm not sure. Demexco used to be, and we'll talk about that, like particularly in Europe. I don't know if I'm missing any, but like, let's get into it, Christian, because I started to know of you. I don't know if we knew each other in person when you were basically the face of Demexco. Like, I thought of Demexco, like I thought of you, really. But you didn't start in this events business, right? So you were working in Germany, and we'll get into Demexco. But explain like how you found yourself.
Yeah, let me summarize quickly. So yes, I came to the kind of media world becoming the assistant of the German Cannes Lions representatives years ago. That was back in the 90s. And therefore, my first Cannes Lions experience was in 94 and 95, being his assistant. And of course, it was purely the creativity event and only happening at the Palais de Festival. Nothing happened on the beaches or in all these hotels.
Wait, this was in the 90s?
Yeah, that was in the 90s, 94, 95. Okay. Yeah. And then
it's before my Cannes time. So you
okay. Yeah. As I said, it was different. Should I say more enjoyable? I don't know. It was different. However, and then over the next following 2-3 years, I learned about this internet thing which came up, right? And we learned about, hey, we can run ads, these boring, big, static banner ads. I was then the guy in Germany, based in Germany at this time, who sold one of the first banner ads in the German market. So I ran my own little company, you know, kind of agency, I was stepping into this online digital advertising world very early days. Then I came to AOL and Yahoo for a long time and worked there in the corp world, which was amazing. These brands were outstanding at this time. They were leading the industry. And then came my move when I left Yahoo in 2007, beginning of 2007, I moved to New Zealand for private reasons, for lifestyle reasons, with my family. And right. What I haven't planned then was that 3 months later, I told my family that I'm flying back to Germany to launch a new business together with my business partner, who was based still in Germany, and that became Demexco. So we launched Demexco in 2008, a year later, in a time where we experienced the financial crisis, where our industry, as a kind of virtual industry, you know, we are not running hardware products. We are not an automotive industry, right, with hardware going into a trade fair hall.
Yeah.
So we were, I would say, the first ones who thought about a physical event like a trade show for this industry, which was mainly happening on screens, which was weird for many people. So that was my first step into the event world.
And Demexco was always an outlier to me just for that reason. Like, trade shows were not really part of this world. A little bit with like Internet World and what was it, Comdat. Like, there was a few. And I think the ad tech conference had an element of that. They had a vibrant, like, sort of
Or it was added to events, you know, like CES, which for decades now is a major
tech show. Tech has trade shows, and marketing did not really for the most part. But I also think there's like, tell me if I'm wrong here, there's like a little bit of a cultural element. I find like Germany in particular has a lot of trade shows. Is this me like?
No. I think you're
stereotyping
right.
Or something.
No, I think you're right. So you can find a proper trade fairground, you know, in every bigger city in Germany, and not just in the main capital. However, that made it our life a bit easier. You're right. So the willingness, you know, to think about such a thing was very much there, and therefore we had to put it into a format which works well, right, with the conference edit and things like this. But at the end, yes, going into a windowless big trade hall, or over the time into many trade halls, right, it became a 1.5 million square feet event over the time. That was a bit weird for many people still, but the Germans, our inner network where we started with, they were comfortable back, right? Because they're used to go to trade shows. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So this was, when you guys started it, it was more German than international.
Yeah. It was definitely designed in the first step for a German market. And then because we were somehow the first of its kind, you know, then we immediately felt an interest from other European regions, specifically the main markets like France and UK and Spain, et cetera. And then it was myself who was very much interested in bringing more the global audience to New Mexico at this time. So I was very passionate about this. I believe that only with an international audience, whether on stages, but on the show floor as well, with a lot of international exhibitors, it becomes a real show, because Europe was not leading that industry at this time. It was US and it was other regions. So I was convinced that this needs to be done to become the major event at this time for the industry. And I spend a lot of time therefore in the US and also in Asia to bring more international audience to Mexico.
Yeah. And like Germany's like a kind of funny market I found like with that, in that like it's like big enough. I mean, I'm gonna be a little American here, right? Like, so it's like it's big enough that like it throws its weight around that other European countries don't. But in the global context, like, you know, but that's why people like international. It's like, okay, well, you know, the U.S. market is far bigger. You have to go pan-European to make Europe close to like the U.S. But I always found the German market can be honestly somewhat like insular.
Very protective. Yes, very protective, especially the media companies, et cetera, which is still the case. But we had massive discussions at this time, you know, why we want to become so international, et cetera. And I said, well, you know, we have to bring everybody who rules the world. You know, we have to be part of New Mexico. We cannot believe, you know, as an isolated region here, that we can do it on our own. So, but yeah, you're right. Germany is very much protective when it comes to this. I also have to say that, you know, because I experienced this several times, one thing which is not true is that Europe is one country. So coming from the U.S., especially the ad tech companies at this time, you know, who all expanded into Europe.
They think it's one country?
Yeah, so sometimes I got the impression that, you know, you guys believe that this is one country and we can do it, you know, as one.
I can't speak for the other 340
However, million. Yeah, it turned out that it's not. And it turned out that the Germans had to learn that, you know, we have to open up a bit more to other regions. And that was the success, I think, of New Mexico.
Yeah. So one of the things that I never actually got to Mexico, only because like it was only 2 days and it wasn't a long time to go to Cologne, and we had a team when I was at Digiday in London, so they covered off on New Mexico. But the things that I do know about it is one of the hallmarks of it were these stands, okay? And explain what the stands. Tell me if this is correct.
This is correct. I mean, you go to a, let's say you go to CS, right? And you see these impressive stands, you know, big and double storage and all these things, you know,
companies. They're structures. They're structures.
Infrastructures and structures, correct. And they invest a lot of money into this every year again, because it needs to be redesigned. You know, you cannot reuse all the material every year and things like this. And this was such a need and such a passion for this, you know, to present the industry in a more and more professional way and not just putting up your little banner, right, and have a high table and two high chairs, and this is called your stand. So that was so impressive to see. And if you look into pictures from that time, especially around 2015, 16, 17, when we were at the high with 60,000 people. So you was the only missing one, right? We had 60,000 people on site over 2 days coming from all over the world, despite the bad connections, you know, to fly into Frankfurt and then hop on a train to Cologne. But maybe that was the interesting part for many.
Yeah. And so you left to Mexico in 2018, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? And I mean, I was surprised at the time. I don't want to get into so much detail. You probably don't want to. But like, I had always thought that you were like the owner of it, honestly. Like, I didn't know. I didn't like deeply, you know, study to Mexico. But I just your partner, Frank. I just knew that you guys as
we had like, our shares. I mean, we were a part owner and we had our shares.
And
then there was, I mean, it's such a long time ago. However, you know, we had a clear vision, you know, for internationalization and all these things. And there was a strong ask, you know, to focus a bit more onto the German market at this time, things like this. So at the end, we've decided, hey, it makes sense after 11 years. To go different paths, and you know, in 18, I mean, nobody knew what would happen shortly after. Some called me, you know, I was just lucky, you know, to step out of the event business before the pandemic hit us a couple of months later. So whatever it is, that was a great time. Of course, it was an exceptional time, and we made it, you know, we created New Mexico, and it was seen as the international tentpole event for the digital advertising industry at this time.
Okay, so but afterwards, you were, I'm sure a lot of people were like, you're just going to start to Mexico again. But you're doing something different. But what did you take from to Mexico that led to Possible, and how, what was the thing that you saw missing? Because as you said, you didn't start off in the events business, but then you had like a decade of experience running and scaling this massive event. But we all take away different things. And like Possible is, despite me not going to New Mexico, I believe it is not a carbon copy of New Mexico.
No, it's not. It's not. And a couple of things. First and foremost, if you think about launching a new business, in this case, launching a new event, you have to be different than existing events. Of course, you cannot just expect, you know, copy and pasting something would succeed. This was one clear thing for me, you know, I had to think about something different. At the same time, it was obvious for me that the time of creating just big events, mass events, is over. Especially when you think about launching a new event. If you're an existing, you know, event like CS, you know, or Cannes Lions, you know, you exist for decades, you have a lot of history, etc. That's a different story. You're building on that and develop further. But with something new in your mind, you have to be different. And it was not just about becoming big. I think quantity is no longer the currency. It's all about quality. And everybody agrees with this. I've spoken to whether the brands, whether executives, whether tech companies, time and efforts to spend is more valuable than any kind of budget. So approaching this idea of Possible was not, how can I make it commercially successful? How can I make it big to sell it 5 years later? That would be the wrong approach. It was purely all about quality and convince the entire marketing world how it's set up in today's world, which is far more diverse and complex, as we know, to bring everybody together in a so highly curated way. And I'm not just talking about the stages and the programming. In many ways, highly curated, that people see this as a huge benefit, as an added value to all the existing events in our industry. Because one more thing. One was obvious for me. We are going for not increasing budgets when it comes to the commercial part. We had to go to the existing budget. So we had to be so successful that companies and people will take money away from other events to spend with us.
Okay. And you're the sponsor base, right? Like, I mean, you've got attendee, you know, revenue, but you also have sponsor revenue.
Yeah.
And sponsor revenue is usually, I don't know how it is in your model, but it's usually larger in these models. And a lot of the sponsor, and I'll say the attendees, I mean, these are substitutable in some way. Like, I mean, you do have to make budget decisions, you know, and like, you know, you put it on the calendar when you did, and I think it was probably strategic between CES and Cannes. Like, you're not, you know, there was talk for a while. I think Martin Sorrell really kicked it off by saying Cannes was too brash and stuff one year, and just because it was too expensive. Yeah. And it is expensive. Trust me.
Martin also told me when I was sharing my idea, my vision before I launched Possible with some of the leaders in the market, and Martin, of course, was one of them because we are close friends. And he immediately told me, Christian, we don't need another fucking event. So don't do this.
Okay, so this was not the event he wanted. I think he just wanted Cannes somewhere like a little bit less expensive than the south of France. And there's a lot of difficulties in operating in Cannes. Like, it's just, it's a very difficult place. I'm surprised that Essential hasn't threatened, if they haven't already, to move it somewhere else. But you didn't want to go head to head with that. Cannes is a juggernaut. I mean, it's massive. The opportunity you saw was one to do a marketing conference, but also situate it in close to the United States in Miami. Yeah. And I think that's important. Like, you know, getting Cannes is a global event, right? But there's a lot of Americans who go there. Tell me what else that you decided was, you know, the white space. Yeah. Because you didn't want it to make, you don't build it. Cannes was built in a totally different generation. Mm-hmm. And so it was started by French cinema owners, for anyone who doesn't know the long tortured history, because they started putting ads on movie screens. And so they said, hey, we got to get excitement around this. We got to get better ads. So let's start like an awards program. And it grew out of that. But you decided to do something that was a little bit more, I think it's more business focused. Cannes is this way, but like it's a weird, because of its history, it's a weird like amalgamation of things, I think. And also like an ecosystem of that, which I think is important.
Yeah, it's you cannot compare us because of the reasons you've mentioned. And at some stage, you know, you need different events around the year for most of the companies who are then targeting different audiences. But everybody is more thoughtful about where to spend time and money with less events. That's my impression from the last couple of years. So if you're in the range of the top three events, then you're the winner. Otherwise, you struggle. And it was obvious for me that with the experience from New Mexico, I still believe in the activation space. I don't call it trade fair show anymore because I wanted something which provides more excitement and more inspiration. And therefore, I decided to go to Miami Beach in the US. This is the market. There was a need for that. It doesn't exist. It didn't exist at this time. And Miami obviously was for all the attendees and partners, we all Miami for different reasons, but for the event business, it was the first time going to Miami for such an event. And otherwise we know Vegas, you know, everybody goes to Vegas 10 times a year for all kinds of events, or New York. However, that allowed me to do something differently, indoor, outdoor activations,
yeah,
in combination with a conference. And this sounds simple, but it didn't exist. And this makes it so unique. At this highly curated level, I already mentioned, and I come back to this later on. And then talking to brands and marketers, that Possible idea was designed and discussed with marketers from marketers foremost. And therefore the MMA, as the association of the industry body for marketers, was heavily involved and was a key driver as well. So with this support and then a lot of industry leaders who just believed into the vision and joined me to bring it to life, that was such an impressive support. And honestly, I would only do it again in the US because of this environment, which is positive for entrepreneurs. You cannot do this in Germany. You cannot do this in Europe like this.
Yeah, and I think that's right. Like, so it's in the Fontainebleau, which Miamians call the Fontainebleau for some unknown reason. I will call it the Fontainebleau. It's in the Fontainebleau in Miami Beach. And the outdoor area, it which is usually a series of pools, it still is a series of pools, but it's surrounded by a lot of these cabanas that sponsors take out. They have meetings there. They have some like cocktail hours and whatnot. And they're just like, they're little
presentations.
I didn't see the cabanas.
But now this year, we're expanding into the Eden Rock and Novotel next door. So we are doubling the footprint. Right. It's still one central place, which is great. You don't need to hop in a cab, you know, or a taxi to go to another place. And we bring around 6,000 people, you know, senior executives from brands, from agencies, consultancies, tech companies, creator economy together. And this environment provides such an energy, but in a positive way. It's not chaotic. It's not too overwhelming. It's curated. it's somehow better structured. This year, we're also going to the beach. Yeah. We are running 3,000 meetings, scheduled meetings between brand marketers and vendors. In addition to your own schedule you are setting up when you're one of our partners and have your own space. This is optional.
Are you doing that on the beach?
We're doing this on the beach. So it could be
a better environment. This is the kind of thing you don't do in New York. Like, you could do this, and not just because there is no beach, exactly. But like Miami would be like, you want the beach for a day? Absolutely.
Exactly.
Things happen there. They love business. They love capitalism. Yeah. So yeah, you bring up a really interesting point, and that is the hosted buyer model. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to get a little event nerdy here. Yeah. There's different types of events. You know, it's not just events. Like, we talked about trade shows. Those have their own. I personally am, like, as like a consumer, I'm horrified by trade shows. But like, as someone who is a capitalist, I really like trade shows. Any business where your customers line up at the end to sign their contract for the next year, I like that business. I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. But like, there's upsides and downsides to that. Hosted buyer model is one I know really well, because this was the model that was used at Digiday. And it involves you. It's almost like a controlled circ model of trade publishing, but you bring in like a lot of the sort of target audience, I don't know how else to put it. And, you know, they're your guests, you know, they might get a travel stipend, they get a free comp ticket to the event.
Yeah.
And in exchange, they do meetings with your ecosystem partners, which are the people who want to sell to you. Now, that sounds like pretty, you know, to some, like in the capital J journalism world, they're like, that's a little crass. It's like, this is a business. And matching up a buy and a sell side is how business takes place. So talk to me about how you decided to meld a few different models with possible, because I don't think there's a festival model, there's a conference model, mm-hmm. there's a hosted buyer model. And it seems like you've taken like a few different elements.
Absolutely correct. I like the description, as you said. It was the challenge was to combine it in a good way, that it doesn't feel separate from each other. Obviously, we did this, and it became one great experience. And on top of that, we have so many different formats that whether you are a senior marketer, whether you're a tech executive, whether you're from the mid management, we provide different formats for each of those individuals or each of these audiences, and that makes it so unique that you can really pick and choose. And when it comes to whether you want to spend, and it's all optional, right? It's no obligation that you have to go into meetings, for example. It's optional. But of course, the benefit is it's targeted, as you said. You know exactly who you're going to meet. It's double confirmed, double opt-in. So brand marketers who are committing to these meetings, or minimum number of meetings over 3 days, as you said, they get a comp ticket for the entire show. They get a travel reimbursement. So there's no reason for a CMO, for a team leader to deny, you know, that the team is coming as well. And this is how we bring more marketers on site. And
that's critical.
It's critical for most, if not all of the rest, to be able to connect with them in different ways. The hosted
meeting program. Yeah, because in this world, the like marketer is like, I always joke that like, all you need to know about this world is that there are multiple marketer halls of fame. You know, the fact that there isn't just one, that there's multiple ones, tells you the money starts on the marketer side, okay? And it makes its way through a crazy daisy chain ecosystem. And some of it ends up in publishers, a lot of it does not. But like that's how it works. And there's a lot, and the marketers are the kind of rock stars. And in an ecosystem event, which means you're not just, it's not the ANA, right? Like you need to have at your core the marketer audience, right? Even if they're going to be a minority of the attendees, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we call it at Hive Group, you know, who acquired us 2 years ago, we call them the gold dust. You know, Mark Joshua, our CEO, calls them the gold dust. And this is exactly the right description. You know, these are the most, valuable, but of course they're so hesitant, you know, to go to events for good reasons. They prefer peer-to-peer conversations because the challenges which they're facing are so immense. And this is the reason why we came up all over the last 3 years with additional ideas how to serve the marketing industry and the marketers themselves. We have a new CMO experience this year with the CMO lab. which is not a typical conference type of thing, which allows marketers, senior marketers, to come together in a protected environment for peer-to-peer conversations over 3 days, because they normally don't want to be in a big room with 1,000 sellers in the room, right? This is not their style, which I totally understand. On the other hand, they're happy to send their teams into the meetings, right? And to bring all the information back into
the
company.
So you keep that. I think someone had mentioned it to me at one like possible about like the CMOs being in like the red keep, you know, like they were like sort of like not actually there. We were saying the market, like they're there, but like, you know, they're there.
And with these things, you know, we keep them on site and, you know, and not just having them on stage speaking and then disappear. This is one big benefit. And of course, there are so many events happening, as you mentioned at the beginning, you know, happy hours on site. And then, of course, a dinner here and lunch here. So they are all involved in this. But of course, yeah, you cannot expect a global CMO from one of the top 10 advertisers walking around the show floor or the activation space all day long, right? This is not going to happen. As well as, you know, Elon Musk, when we had Elon Musk there in the first year, of course, he didn't do this as well. So this is something which just requires a more creative approach to connect the right people together. And there is always, you know, there's always part of the audience which fits perfectly well, you know, just browsing around all day long and run into each other, while others would like to have a scheduled itinerary before they show up. I think that's fair and absolutely normal.
Yeah. And I think choosing the Fontainebleau was a good decision, because like it's unusual for a Miami Beach property in that it's very large. Like it almost reminds me of a little bit of like a Las Vegas kind of, in that like most like Miami Beach hotels are not as large as the Fontainebleau complex. And now they've built out a conference center and it connects to Eden Rock. And really you can, I don't know how you end up seeing it, because I think it was last year, I was like, you guys got to take over the entire Fontainebleau. We got families on vacations. We got OnlyFans models. Like, I feel bad. I always feel bad. Like, I'm like, knowing that it's Miami and they always forget to tell tourists that the tip is included in the bill, that like they don't tell the people who are booking that like you're going to be in the middle of a massive, not massive, but for them, it'll be massive marketing conference.
Yeah. No, it was. I remember I went to Miami Beach in March 22, and signed the contract with the Fontainebleau at the end of the pandemic. And it was just a year before the first event should be launched. So it was a tough timeline. And I arrived there in March, and it was spring break. As you can imagine, arriving there, I was shocked, right?
That was the original spring break too. This was like a little wilder. Miami Beach has cracked down on spring break.
Wow, it was wild enough for me, right? And I thought to myself, holy moly, how should I do an event here?
It's more PG-13 now, Christian.
So, but we figured out at the end, we are in April when spring break is over. And of course, we are really, really ambitious that, you know, we wanted to have a buyout, a complete buyout, so that we can really keep our audience together. And this is the case now. So it's a full buyout of the Fontainebleau,
a
full buyout of the Eden Rock. Next door, we have Soho House. And yes, that was somehow part of the vision, you know, when I thought about how to further grow.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the, and tell me if I'm wrong here, it's like one of the weird parts about Cannes is that they leak a lot. You know, I mean, the reality is like you go to Cannes and there's activations everywhere outside of the Palais is where the main sort of programming takes place, but it's so decentralized everywhere in Cannes. People have beaches, people have houses, people have villas up and down the Croisette, the main like drag. Whereas when you're in Miami Beach, you're not in South Beach, which is good.
Right.
And then you're kind of, it's mid beach and you're kind of like contained a little bit.
Yeah,
but you're not like isolated where you're at some like, you know, a lot of people do events and like,
you're not caught in prison, of course. And therefore in the evening when all these, you know, gatherings and dinners are happening and parties as well, this also happens then offsite nearby or in somewhere in Miami Beach and sometimes also in Miami, which is great. So we create an ecosystem, a massive community around this. The event itself will grow further. But it's not about, as I said at the beginning, it's not about numbers per se, right? I don't have the vision that it has to be 20,000, 30,000 in 2 years' time. It has to be the right quality, bringing the right people into the room is still the main goal. And then you grow automatically. But knowing that a lot of more parties, you know, are added to, and not parties in terms of events, but parties in terms of companies and the entire ecosystem is now looking into Miami every April and is added to the event itself, which is another kind of growth, which is great to see, by the way. You know that this is now becoming, the tentpole event, at least for the US market. And of course, I would not complain to have an even more international audience over the next couple of years, but let's see.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. No, I think it's established itself there on the calendar. If you consider
to come back every year, then it's an established event.
Yeah, I don't even go to Stresco, right? It was too far. We had people who were like an hour away. They took the train. They went to the, what is that? That Exchange Wire conference used to have it before to Mexico. And then they would go to this. I was just letting them take the lead. That was it. It was nothing about to Mexico. But like you, it's also capped, right? Like those are like big hotels, right? But like you can't do, it would be difficult to do like a 15,000. I don't think you could like in that space anyway, if you wanted to, maybe with the new conference center. I don't know. You'd have to move over to.
I mean, what I've learned as well is, yes, you need planning. And of course, you have to have a vision which you can share with your audience. I'm not thinking about the next 6, 7, 8 years, to be honest, because things are changing so dramatically.
Yeah.
It will evolve. And I think we are flexible enough, to be honest. We have big convention centers in Miami Beach. We have additional convention centers in the hotels. We have other hotels next to those ones we are already using. So I don't know where we will really end up in a couple of years' time if it becomes such a big event with tens of thousands of people. Again, I'm not working for that goal every day. I'm just working on the quality, right?
That's okay.
and let's have this conversation in 3, 4 years' time, and then we might say, okay, it's still the same, and it's established as the Davos of the marketing world, right? Because Davos, the World Economy Forum, it's not the biggest event in the world, but it's seen as the most important one when it comes to a different agenda, as we all know. So it's not necessarily the biggest one.
Yeah, right. And so a lot of publishers are pivoting to events, mm-hmm. right? And I've always been struck by, at least in this industry, and I don't know if it's reflective. I mean, it is throughout B2B. I mean, usually, yeah, it's weird because in B2B media, you end up having, like, your competitive set is totally different, right? Because a lot of the business models are around events, and your competitors are not just other publishers. And I think lots of publishers are finding this out now, not just in B2B. It's trade associations. They often have like the biggest event in a sector. It's independent. It's, you know, events organizations. Like Possible is not it's not like a publisher, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you publish content, but it's not at its heart a publisher. And I think that there's upsides and downsides to both approaches. What would you say are the dynamics that a lot of publishers get wrong when they do events versus like when people who are not publishers, who are not, you know, content, I don't want to say content focused, but like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like publishers, like media, how media approaches events, I find, particularly if they come from the journalistic side, it is often very different from how business people events, because you have live journalism on one side, and then you have people who understand that this is about matching up a buy and a sell side, and the programming and the insights piece are a part of that, but that is next to like cocktail parties. I would always say this to like our team. I'm like, the stuff we do on stage is unbelievably important, but don't get this twisted. The cocktail party is just as important.
I mean, that's a very good question, and I also would like to include associations in my feedback to you, publishers and media companies and associations. I understand that if you build up such an audience, right? As an association, you have your members, publisher, you have your audience, your readers, and so on. You want to stay connected with them all year round. And it's obvious that you want to have this also, let's call it monetized, commercialized, connected to them all year round at events.
Yeah, the margins on events are really good.
Not too bad. But then you are stuck in the middle of the big events, independent events, And those ones who are, I call them boutique events, right? The 50, 100, 150 people events where the more senior people are, you know, like to be more because of the peer-to-peer conversations, intimate environments. And this makes it very difficult per se to have an event over 1, 2, 3 days with a couple of hundred people at least, if not into the thousands. And then you're also stuck in to your audience, right? And the external perspectives are somehow missing, you know? And this is what I had in mind was possible. Embracing the entire economy, embracing the entire marketing world, and not exclude anyone. And I was also approached and was asked, hey, are you now competing with publisher events? Or I said, absolutely not, because this is an addition, but this is the first of its kind which embraces everybody and everything. And I think this is a challenge, and I've seen a couple of failing, right? I mean, some of these events disappeared in the meantime from publishers and from associations, because you need a dedicated knowledge to run events. It's not just that you can say, hey, we are great in creating content and you can bring content on stage, no doubt, as a publisher. You can bring great content on stage and great speakers because of your network. But what's beyond that? You have content and you create some networking opportunities. But I think people want also business opportunities. And this is what an event like Possible and others will do. And this goes beyond that. I've seen too many similar events providing content, more or less isolated, you know, focusing on one dedicated topic or audience. This is not enough in today's world anymore. This is not enough. And by the way, sorry to say, as a non-American coming to the US and be then invited to those events in the middle of nowhere for 1.5 or 2 days in a resort, disconnected from the rest of the world, if it's not a senior leadership summit, then I don't want that. You know, I'm ending up in a windowless kind of a ballroom of one of these hotels, which look all similar. And
invite Christian to Scottsdale to your event in Scottsdale. He's not interested.
This is not inspiring. I don't see huge benefits out of this, to be honest.
Well, that is the irony. It's like, you know, look, I have like a lot of strong opinions about resorts because I spent 10 years where I added it up. I would spend basically 30 days a year in resorts. So I have a lot of strong opinions about turndown service and various other resort matters. But it was always you're in the most beautiful place and you're in a windowless, dark, like hotel ballroom with the same horrible carpets and the chandeliers. Exactly. I was looking at those chandeliers for almost a decade. So
exactly.
I hear you. And that is like something that I think, you know, like events they're difficult to do. They're a details business. And it's not just you roll the ball out and then like say, hey, we're doing some live journalism. There's cocktails at 5. Yeah. You have to get all the details right. And you have a job to do. And that is matching up people with each other. People go to events to connect, not just with new ideas. That is absolutely part of it. But they generally judge the success of the event on who they connected with. At least that's how I do. Yeah. I went to a cocktail party last night. And the hors d'oeuvres were fine. There was a little bit of like quote unquote programming and a discussion, but it was mostly about the people I talked to.
Yeah.
So.
And there's another aspect, what I believe is becoming more important is also knowing it from my own experience, having, you know, I've seen, I think, all our industry events around the world in recent years. Quite often you come to an event and then it's your own responsibility to get organized and you know, to get orientation, etc. And if the event is even bigger, then of course you sometimes feel really lost and too overwhelmed. People want to be hosted. You need to be a host, which means my philosophy is also if we go into the thousands now coming to Possible every year, at the end I would like to know everybody's agenda and expectation and wish list to meet their requirements, to meet their expectations. And this, I want to describe with that example that it's not enough to just call people into a place and then leave it with them to get organized and find their own way to find the right content power and find the right people to connect with, etc. I think in a very meaningful way, they want to be hosted. They want to be curated. And this is what I've meant at the beginning. This is what we try to achieve was possible. It's not just bringing thousands together and then, yeah, find your own way. we are spending so much efforts and time and money, by the way, to make this a different experience.
Yeah. I mean, there's a drone show. At least there was.
Not this year.
No? Okay. There's still time. Maybe there could be someone who comes in late. What do you think of the like festival approach to events compared to how you're doing things?
I wouldn't call possible a festival, but
right. I don't think of it as.
No, but you said, you know, it was a festival component, it was a conference component and a meeting component, et cetera. I think this is the right combination. Festival is people wants to be more entertained, inspired, wants to have and be more in a creative environment, call it whatever it is, but not entertained in a way that it's only fun and you know, just for pleasure. Of course, it's business. We talk about business. But you do business, you're more creative, you're more inspired, you're more open-minded, I believe, if you're in such an environment and with people. And by the way, this is why we also came up with the name Possible. Be in such a positive environment. You know, we have a lot of challenges to overcome and to solve and problems and things like this and as an industry. And the environment is, as we all know, becoming more difficult every year. It feels like this. Let's create a positive momentum. With Possible. Let's make everything possible. Let's make the impossible possible. Let's create this momentum and environment to inspire people so that the outcome is more exciting. It's more specific, concrete, whatever you call it, for everybody to take home. And if we can achieve this, then I'm doing a good job with my team.
Yeah. How do you... And I guess it's on their side, but you end up having to do it as a seller. Like, how do you show ROI on the sponsorships, right? Like, so I think one of the things that I always liked about a hosted buyer model is that part of the model, and a lot of that was the Digigen model that I'm very familiar with. Yeah. Was that it produced receipts? I was like, okay, you had these meetings with these people had this much, you know, spending power. And, you know, we did our job, you know, before we had that model when I was there, it was like, okay, let's hope that the sales team did their job at the cocktail party and connected with the people that they needed to. Whereas this allowed it to be very like curated, but also produce like receipts. But like, how do you end up thinking about that? Because I think as events become so much more important. I know that there's startups like working on this. Yeah. The attribution, it needs to get far better. Yeah. I mean, this is a big business.
Yeah. And I also believe that because of the requirements are far, far more diverse than ever, you need different layers. So first and foremost, which is the core thing behind everything is you bring, in this case, a couple of thousand people together. What is your audience? Who is your audience? Is it just everybody who belongs to this? It doesn't matter the seniority level and you have to think about your audience. This is the base for everything. Those 6,000 or, you know, 6,000 plus executives on site in April, they're all providing such a benefit for our partners who will show up in different ways. So, and then you need different layers. You need to give everybody, the partner side, but also the audience side, enough flexibility to find their own way, to find each other and have a more randomly set up agenda every day. For those who wants to be more specific, we set up these dedicated meetings. You know exactly who you're going to meet. You know exactly the topic you're discussing with. So we're creating business opportunities, very specific ones. And then we have the content part, you know, the conference, which provides ideas for your business. And therefore, you're starting to think about who can help me in my today's business and in my tomorrow's business. And everybody is on site. That's the beauty. You don't need to leave the event and think about it. Who can help me? And then think about 6 months and reach out to different parties. You have them all on site. Tech companies, agencies, consultancies, et cetera, et cetera. So you can do your job. And this is so important to understand. You can do your job. If you attend it possible, you can do your job. And you should spend the full 3 days or 3.5 days with kicking off on Sunday in the meetup. This runs your business for the next couple of months. You don't need, honestly, you don't need necessarily to go to another event within the next couple of weeks or months because you can really do it here. Do not just show up and go into a keynote session and then go to a party and then disappear because then you're running behind these opportunities we provide all on site.
So as someone who does, I mean, I do smaller scale gatherings. I don't do to this size or even the size that we had done at DigiDay when I was there. I'm always amazed at the sheer number of events. Like, you must also be, right? Like, I regularly talk with people who are like, I'm like, I can't believe I go on LinkedIn and I'm like, there are some people that I think might be at events like 250 days a year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if other industries operate this way other than the sort of media.
I think we are very special as an industry, yes, when it comes to this.
That's a way of putting it.
Yes.
I'm gonna use that euphemism going forward, Christian. Yeah. At least I'll use it as a euphemism. Like, what do you see? Yeah, what do you see as do you see that there's too many events, and like what and what do you think will end up?
No, I'm not saying that they're not saying there are too many events because they're all there for a reason, but I'm saying that I see people going to less events a year. So okay. They're spending less time at events. And this, of course, brings some or will create some potential issues for some events, you know, who are not in this critical spotlight. In general, you know, everybody belongs to the industry. So if you're very, you know, targeted in terms of topic, then you might be well hosted and you know, you it might be a good decision to go to a half day, you know, conference with five speakers, you know, and get a deep insight on a dedicated topic. But if you want to get a complete overview of all kind of things which belongs to our industry, then the bigger events are more appropriate for you. So are there too many events? There are too many similar events. Let's say it like this. There are too many copycats, from my perspective, who wanted to take part in this business model, which is an attractive one. You're right. But I don't think that this is a long-lasting model.
Okay, Christian, thank you. In part two, we're going to talk about which the copycats are, but you're going to have to stay tuned for that. Thanks so much, Stu. See you in Miami Beach.
Thank you so much.